Friends, we started this course on microfinance and we have completed 6 chapters. We made a beginning with the financial inclusion. Then we had some kind of discussions on self-help groups. Then we had something on National Rural Livelihood Mission. Then we went to the joint liability groups. Then we went into the microfinance institutions. Then 6th chapter, we had some discussions on use of technology in microfinance. In this chapter, today we are beginning with the chapter 7, which is looking more into the impact of COVID-19 on microfinance sector as a whole. COVID-19 was something like a medical emergency. It created impact on all the sectors of the economy, and microfinance was not an exception to it. What we realized is, over 90% of the workforce is engaged in the unorganized sector, and microfinance deals with this unorganized sector. These people are given the loans without the physical collaterals. So naturally, the impact is more when the supply chains are disrupted. And as we know, in the COVID-19 period, the supply chains were disrupted. We had an impact on the livelihood. Fortunately, agriculture was one of the sectors which was more resilient. In the sense, it was affected least as far as the COVID-19 is concerned. Against this background, we shall see today what had been the impact of that medical emergency or COVID-19 on the whole microfinance sector. Pictures are showing you that basically these are the unorganized sector. We got the loans from the system without any collaterals. Once these loans are without collaterals, they are likely to get affected more because there is nothing fallback for the lender to get the recovery. Under these circumstances, what happened to the sector is interesting. And this is what we are trying to understand today through the slides which will follow soon. As far as the chapter is concerned, what we are going to cover that is listed here. You must be wondering why we should start with bottom-up pyramid. Bottom-up pyramid we are beginning because most of the people who are at the bottom-up pyramid are served through the microfinance sector. But against this background, we would like to see what happens to the bottom of pyramid when some kind of medical emergency comes up in the form of COVID-19. Second, we are going to see what is the impact on the overall economy. Maybe we will just touch upon the world economy and we shall also touch on the Indian economy. The more important part will be what happens to the agriculture sector. Because in the COVID-19, this was one of the sectors which was resilient, which was affected the least compared to these sectors like services and industries. We shall also look into some kind of providers of microfinance sector. Like I told you earlier, the microfinance is served by the banking system, the microfinance is served by the NBFCs, the NBFC MFIs, the small finance banks. All these players are in the sector. How these are affected, how their portfolio changes over a period of time. Maybe we shall have some kind of understanding because of COVID-19, what is the impact on these shares, relative shares of these agencies. We shall also see the effect of the COVID-19 on the MFIs, the MFI clients. We shall also share some kind of Indonesian experience as far as the COVID-19 is concerned, so that we get a broad idea that what happened in India is not different than what happened elsewhere also. Something we shall see on the self-help groups and their bank linkage program, how this program was affected because of the COVID-19. We shall also go into some kind of the most important area as far as the banks are concerned is the collection efficiency. Especially the microfinance sector, they had a problem because of the COVID-19. We are slowly recovering from the COVID-19 problem, but we must have an understanding that if something like this happens, what should be our strategy? And therefore, we are going to cover some more areas. Like, what are the measures which were taken by the government of India when the COVID-19 occurred? What were the measures by SADHAN, which is basically a self-regulatory organization, or in short, we call them as SROs? What is the role of the institutions like NABARD and SIDBI, who are more as a development financial institutions? How they supported how the microfinance sector during the COVID-19 period, we shall deal with that. We are going to look into some kind of responses of the microfinance institutions. We are going to have a case study of the SKDRDP, Sri Kshetra Dharmasthala Rural Development Project, which is in Karnataka. We shall see how they responded to this whole medical emergency or some kind of pandemic. What are the outcomes of the interventions? Various outcomes, as I said, maybe banks initiated, the NABARD, RBI, everybody initiated some steps. What is the outcome of these kind of interventions? We shall see. We shall also look into the process mechanisms which are adopted by the MFIs during the pandemic. This is very important for us. And we shall also look to some kind of, you know, challenges and suggestions for the microfinance institution. What should be the future strategy so that in case of emergency recurs, what should be their approach to minimize the impact? We cannot eliminate the impact, but we can always minimize the impact of such medical emergencies or such pandemics. Let me look, start with the bottom of pyramid, as I said. Let us look to the whole economy, you know. Maybe we have completed 75 years of independence. And if we look to per capita income, we moved from $3 per capita to something like, you know, $1,980 on per capita basis in the recent past. These figures, what they convey to me? Possibly they are conveying that if I work out a compound annual growth rate, my growth rate was around 9.2% per annum. This is the growth which was achieved in per capita income. Please remember, the growth happened on per capita basis. But during this period, there is one concern which has happened, that this was accompanied by the inequalities. Inequalities or unevenness. Different sections of the people were benefited differently. And therefore, the growth took place. Maybe 9.2% per annum is a growth, but the growth is accompanied by the inequalities or by the unevenness. That's what we should understand. For instance, let me make you a little clear here. 10% of the Indians, only 10% of the Indians, they account for 56% of the income in this country. 10% Indians accounting for 56% of the income, or 74% of the wealth is owned by only 10% of the Indians. Now, this shows that remaining 90% have really the problems, who are at the bottom of pyramid. That's what we have to understand. And these are the guys who get served by the microfinance sector, which is, you know, what we are discussing throughout this course, you know. When I look to a little, you know, to make it my point a little more clear, if I look to bottom 50% of the Indians, top 10% we have discussed, they account for a large chunk of the income and large chunk of the wealth. If I look to the bottom 50%, the Indians, they are accounting for only 14% of the income or 2.5% of the wealth. That 10% were cornering major thing, and the bottom 50% are accounting only for 14% of the income, or, and you can also add it, and or are 2.5% of the wealth in this country. Now, these figures are highlighting what? The poor status of a large proportion of the Indians. Whom I'm talking, 90% of the Indians, that is what these guys are, who are at the bottom of pyramid or at the lower chunk of the rural economy or urban economy even. These guys, their status is not that good. Who are these people? Basically, they are the farm workers. They are basically the construction workers. They are the weavers. They are the self-employed people. These people, they have a poor economic status, and therefore, they depend upon the microfinance sector to a large extent for meeting their financial needs. When I look to the effect of COVID-19, because in this whole chapter, we shall see how the different sectors or how the different sections of the people have been affected. You know, microfinance, as I said, basically they play an important role in delivering the credit to the bottom of pyramid. And please remember two things. These loans are for income generating activities, and these loans are unsecured loans. In the sense, these loans are given without physical collaterals. And therefore, these loans are more vulnerable to the defaults. What that credit risk means, it's more of defaults, you know. Because these loans are without collateral. If some medical emergency like COVID happens, these are the people who get affected more. These are the people who, as I said, they are affected by the uncertainties, the emergencies. And that's why we must give some thought to these people when we talk of the broad COVID-19 pandemic. You know? Basically, I said these are medical emergency. I said it twice, so there is no point in repeating that word. There has been a what happened. There was a loss of jobs. Many people lost their job. And most important thing happened was there was a reverse migration. People moved from urban areas to the rural areas. because the urban area was affected more. Now, here I want to make one point to you clear, that compared to rural and urban, COVID-19 affected the urban people more than the rural people. Because as I said, agriculture was more resilient. Agriculture sector was not affected much. And if I remember the figure correctly, we had a 3.7% growth in agriculture for the last 4 or 5 years. You know, so we had a consistent growth in agriculture and we were not affected much by COVID-19. Therefore, those MFIs who deal with urbanites or urban clients, they were affected more actually, compared to the MFIs who deal with the rural clients, since the rural sector was affected less by COVID-19. The first wave, you know, if we look to the COVID-19, we had series of waves actually. We started with 2020. There was a kind of, you know, the moratorium for 2-3 months, you know, the MFIs gave the moratorium that you need not pay the installments. But subsequently, it was left to the microfinance institutions to restructure the loans or reschedule the loans. The choice was with the MFIs. What to do when this initial, you know, moratorium was given, thereafter what should be the strategy was left to the MFIs. I do agree, there were restructuring, there were rescheduling of loans so that the repayment period was extended and the people got some cushion to repay their loans, you know. Basically what happened, you know, during this period, the disbursement went down actually because of the lockdown. But once the lockdown was lifted, the repayment began and improved subsequently, you know. Basically, if I look to August 2022 figure, which was the latest figure when I prepared this, I realized that repayments have been back at 90-95%. But what happened in the COVID, we shall see through a transparency. But these figures, you must understand that in a normal course of time, their recoveries are around 90-95% if everything is normal. Basically, look to the kind of, you know, global health was affected, you know, as we know it, because this was a medical emergency, so the health was a major issue. And we had this pandemic in March 2020. The pandemic affected the administrative, economic, social fabric of the society because it was a contagious in nature, you know. This is very important. All the things people were affected because of contagious nature of this kind of disease, you know, or the pandemic. Adoption of lockdowns was initiated. The social distancing norms were followed. The travel restrictions were imposed for arresting the spread of COVID-19. This is what we have all experienced over a period of time. This is what is important, you know. As I said, let me look to the impact of the whole pandemic, you know, how the world economy was affected. If you look to 2020 figure, there was a contraction in the GDP of the world economy, -4.4%. Whereas in a normal year, we had something like 5.2% in 2021 and 4.2% in 2022. So therefore, the important thing which affected was the world economy was contracted during the pandemic. Now, this is very important. India is not exception to it. India was also affected, you know. A couple of things we must get into it, that it affected the supply side because the supply chains were disrupted. It affected the demand side also because the consumption and investments were affected because of the pandemic. Our economy, Indian economy, contracted by 6.6%. In the sense, it had a negative growth in 2021. This was basically, as we know it, and I started with it, it was basically due to pandemic, you know. Something, the growth rates improved once the lockdowns were lifted and all those things, you know. And we have gone even to the growth rates which I have given you in this slide. You can see the growth rates have been better even than the pre-pandemic after the lockdowns were lifted and the situation normalized, you know. That's what it gives you, you know. The growth rates which are coming from the national samples, National Statistical Organization, they gave this kind of data that economy has been back in 2021 and 22. And the growth rates are better than the pre-pandemic levels. This is what it shows, you know, that the GDP, you can see a sudden fall in 2021. You can just see we had a contraction or a negative growth in the economy. This is just to highlight that what we said in the text, you know, this is a graphical presentation on the GDP trend. This is estimated at 2011-12 prices. In the sense, these are the real growth rates, you know. after adjusting for the inflation. You know? So you can see the trade, you can see the dip actually, which has happened in 2021. What happened to the Indian economy? As I explained to you, contraction took place. And we adapted to various protocols, you know. We went for vaccination drive. All that helped us to improve our, you know, economy, to move faster, you know. Basically, what I'm giving you a hint is that my even the business expectations and the consumer confidence improved after the COVID-19. And we have seen a higher gross capital formation in the economy. Figures I have given you, you can just glance it. The figures are something like 32% of the GDP took place in the recent period compared to 30.5. In the sense, when the pandemic took place, our gross fixed capital formation lowered down. It has an implication because once the capital formation is lowered down, the growth process gets affected. That is why I give you these figures, that the whole growth process was affected because of the pandemic. You know, once the lockdowns were lifted and the things normalized, our GDP and our gross fixed capital formation, the ratio has improved actually. That's what I wanted to highlight through this slide. Look to the agriculture. As I said, this was one of the sectors which was affected least actually. And this is what this whole slide is giving you, the kind of idea about it. You know? Basically, you know, the clients were affected less. Where? The clients were affected less in the rural areas, or the clients who were dealing with the agriculture sector or allied sectors. That is one conclusion we have drawn it. This was most resilient sector in the economy, where the services industries were affected, but agriculture was affected least, you know. That's what it comes out. The third estimate I'm giving you, agriculture has realized an average growth of about 3.7% between 2017 and 2021-22. So we have a reasonable growth in the last 5 years. That's what this slide is showing you. And the last bullet is highlighting this particular point, you know. This is something what happened to the agriculture sector, you know, in at various years, you know. Basically, there was a dip earlier, but now we have, you know, we have a fairly good growth in the last 5 years. 3.7% is a... This variation happens because of the dependence on agriculture on the monsoon. That's basically we must keep in mind. But we have a relatively better growth in agriculture compared to the services and industries, especially during the pandemic. You know. That's what this slide is showing. This is what I said, that the microfinance is provided by whom? By NBFC MFIs, by banks, by small finance banks, by NBFCs, and by others who are the smaller players in the sector. This is the composition which you can see over a period of time. I've given you 3 years data just to make a point here, that what happens to the, this is the relative shares of different agencies. Agencies in a sense, the left-hand column, the giving you the agency actually, maybe NBFC, MFI, we have the banks, we have the small finance bank. How the relative share changed, you know? You can see the first slide, first row, you know, NBFC, MFI, the share has declined actually. Then whose share has gone up? The share of banking system has gone up, you know, 33 to 42% for banks. Why this happens? This happened because the source of funds for the NBFC MFI is the banking system. And during the pandemic, there was a resource problem for the NBFC MFI, because of which their share has gone down. That's what you can see. But the banks had the funds, liquidity with them. So therefore, their share has marginally gone up from 40 to 42% in 21. This basically shows the dependence of NBFC MFIs on the banking system for resources. And this is what we are going to drive the point further, that what they can do is, you know, their dependence is on the banking system. If the banks do not provide adequate liquidity to NBFC MFIs, then the flow of the microfinance from the NBFCs gets affected. You know, that's what this slide is showing. One, the bank share has gone up, NBFC share has gone down. That's the conclusion I wanted to drive from this transparency. You know. Look the kind of, you know, effect of the COVID on MFIs, you know. Let me make a little, you know, recollection of the earlier facts. Basically, the MFIs, they operate where? They operate in the low penetration of the digital and financial infrastructure. This is one point we have to remember. The areas where the MFIs operate, they have a poor internet connectivity. They have a lower financial digital literacy, lower financial literacy leads to some kind of compounding of the problems for the MFIs. There is a lesser adoption of the digital financial technology by MFIs. And this makes a difficulty for the MFIs to operate, especially in the period of pandemic. Low adoption of digital financial technology has made the MFI's operation little difficult, and we shall see how they were impacted. We shall go into a little more figures on that. But it is enough to understand that these institutions were affected, but they had inherent problems. They deal with the areas where there is a lower penetration of the technology, lower penetration of the infrastructure, lower digital literacy among the clients with whom they deal. All this, they compound their problems actually. Large MFIs, please remember, let me make a distinction here. There are MFIs, if you put in aggregate, possibly will not be able to control much. But these MFIs will have to divide into two or three major categories. One, the small MFIs who have a portfolio of about 100 crores or less than that, and the large NBFCs who have a larger portfolio. The larger MFIs were not affected much because they could mobilize the resources from the banking system at a cheaper rate. Compared to whom? Compared to the small MFIs, is what we have to understand. So liquidity became a problem, especially for the small MFIs now. Deterioration of the income and the vulnerability of small business forced the investors to put on hold their investment plans. Why? Because they were afraid of the kind of portfolio risk. They felt that there are going to be defaults, and therefore the investors hold their investment plan and did not provide adequate liquidity to the MFIs during the pandemic. That's what this point is making it clear. What happened? These are all the small bullets will give you some idea. Let us go one by one, you know. Liquidity was a problem for whom? Especially for the small MFI, for the medium MFIs. Because they depend upon the banking system for their cash flows, you know. As I explained to you, the small MFIs, especially for those who have a portfolio of less than 100 crores, they found it extremely difficult to access the debt or equity during the pandemic. You know, this is what we must remember. You know, the loss of income was more acute for the clients with MFIs whose folio was less than 100 crores, or for the clients of the small MFIs, they were having more problems actually. Urban clients suffered more. This point I made it earlier also, this is a repetition, but that's a bold actually I made it. The urban clients suffered more than the rural clients because the agriculture was affected less compared to the other sectors of the economy. Various initiatives were taken by the farmer producer organizations for what? For ensuring the supply chain, they get restored to some extent. And we have seen this very clearly in case of supply of fruits, vegetables, livestock products like milk. All these things were insured, and therefore some of the kind of, you know, microfinance business, you know, units, they did not get affected that much, although the COVID took place, you know, because the supply lines were restored actually. Because of the essential nature of these commodities, this happened, you know. Let us look to the kind of impact, what happens on these clients, you know. This is what I'm giving you. This is a study by the Sadhan. Sadhan, as I explained to you, this is a self-regulatory organization which helps us in promoting the kind of responsible lending, you know. And they conducted a study to see what happens to the MFI clients, actually. Basically, if you look to all these figures, two, three points, they emerged very quickly. One, the livelihoods were disrupted. 94% of the respondents reported there was a disruption in the livelihood. The livelihood was affected, and as we have seen, there was a reverse migration, people moving from urban areas to the rural areas. That's what happened in the COVID pandemic now. Their income flows were affected. For example, that 57%, the guys were affected during the pandemic, you know. The things are now normal because that's what, when the study was carried out, some of the respondents indicated that after the lockdowns were lifted and all those things, that things have become normal. But one thing very clear, the income levels went down during the pandemic. Now, once the income levels go down, there is a problem of declining of savings and increase indebtedness. That's what you can see. The indebtedness from the informal sector went up actually. because the flow from the MFI was reduced during the pandemic, you know. This is a kind of, you know, 44%, the last but one, you know. You can just see the impact of COVID. There was a problem on the repayment of the kind of, you know, the installments to the MFIs. 44% people did report that there was a problem, you know. Of course, there was an equal number of people who paid also. Maybe by one way or the other they managed. But about 44% of people were affected in repaying their installments to the MFIs. Now, this affected the cash flows of the MFIs. That's very important to remember, you know. Because the whole supply chain was affected, whole livelihood was disrupted. Because of this, the incomes are affected. The moment income get affected, the repayment of the MFIs do get affected. This is a cycle with which this pandemic moved, actually. This is, I'm just sharing you, what happened elsewhere, you know. Okay, India, we suffered. Our economy contracted and livelihoods were disrupted. The supply chain was disrupted. 44% of the MFI did not get their, you know, repayments in time. All these things happened. But what happens to the outside country, you know? One of the Indonesian experience in this regard is quoted, you know. They found that there were, you know, they also had a significant impact on the financial activities of the people. 77% of the business unit owners, they reported what? Shrinkage of sales. Reported the reduction of the business, you know, which we have seen even in this country. So similar experience is there. The business enterprises reported the shrinkage of sales, you know. 41% of the adults received the government assistance. 41%. Remember the figure. During this period, the dependence on government increased, actually. And this is not in only India, but elsewhere also it happened. Like Indonesia, the fairly good figure is there, you know. 41% they received the government assistance compared to 17% during 2018, you know. There was one broad conclusion which was derived, and let me quote it. Most of the population still conducted their financial transaction offline. Offline transactions continued, especially in the microfinance sector, continued to be preferred even outside India. This is what I wanted to highlight. So online and offline, when we discuss that, offline transactions are common even elsewhere. This is what a small point which comes. Of course, it need not continue. We have to only see how we can reduce the offline transactions over a period of time so that the emergency, if it happens, how these guys are going to respond to the kind of whole pandemic, you know. This is what is important to understand. I quoted the reference from where I got these details. Some of you can go through it whenever the time permits for you. Look to the kind of, you know, I said, you know, I made a kind of commitment to you that what happens to the bottom of pyramid, what happens on the economy, what happens to agriculture sector, what happens to the relative shares of the microfinance institutions. I also said there is the effect on SHGs, you know, the self-help groups who were affected because of the COVID. How they were affected is captured in this slide. There was a study by NABARD, you know. They had a study on the SHG's performance, especially in the COVID-19 period. And this study was carried out in Maharashtra, Meghalaya, West. And three observations came, very importantly. One, the SHG members sold their assets, you know. They sold assets, please remember. Because once you do not have income, you have to fall back to meet your consumption needs. And the study has concluded that DSG members were forced to sell their assets. One, they lost their jobs. As I said, the livelihood was disrupted. They discontinued their businesses. They spent less on education. This happens when the pandemic comes or some kind of emergency comes. This is one of the sectors which get affected because you spend more on health, actually. During that period, everybody was spending on health because that was becoming more crucial. So naturally, some other sector gets affected, and the education was one of the sectors who got affected. Now, basically, the functioning of the SHG was affected because of the pandemic. That's what the third conclusion is derived by the study. What the study says, based on these three observations, of course, there are many, but besides these observations, the study is recommending that we must go for digitalization of SHGs for ensuring smoother functioning in years to come. Or if the future crisis take place, what should be the approach? The approach is go for digitalization of the SHGs. That's what the study has recommended. This is the most important thing I wanted to highlight during what happens in the MFIs. Different agencies are given. For example, you know, the months are very typical. March 20, April 20, and May 20. Look to the figures of the NBFC MFI. They had a recovery about 80 to 90% all, whether small finance banks or NBFC MFI or universal bank, they had a recovery of about 80 to 90%. But in April 2020, when we had a pandemic, the recoveries fall down to near zero or less than 2%, as you see in the column, you know, less than 2%. This is the most important thing which got affected, because as I said, the livelihood were disrupted, the supply chains were affected, they lost their jobs. Once this happens, the victim is recovery. And the collection of the MFIs was reduced to almost zero. I will put it somewhere near zero or somewhere between 0.1 to something like 1.8%, something, you know, maybe less than 2% recovery. You know, this is what happens in case of the April 2020. In May 20, slight improvement is there, but the problem continued of collection efficiency. In a sense, there were defaults, especially for the NBFC, for small finance bank, and for the universal banks too. This is a point I made earlier. This data is only showing what I said earlier. It's a reconfirmation of the fact that the collection efficiency was almost a zero in April 2020. Slowly the situation has improved. Once the pandemic, the lockdown was lifted, the economy streamlined and things improved. Thank you very much.